Hey there, listeners. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. We're going to be hosting a live seminar. It's going to be held by video on June 19th. That's Wednesday, June 19th. It'll be 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be 90 minutes. This first seminar is hosted by Amgen. We're going to have three different team members with three different roles, with three different backgrounds, all veterans on the live panel. And just like on the show, I'm going to do 45 minutes of Q&A with the three of them. And then we're going to take 45 minutes and open it up to the audience to answer any and all questions that you have. If you have any interest whatsoever in about Amgen, about the biotech and medical services industry, about functional roles that are universal across every industry, I'd really encourage you to join. I would love to see you there, add some faces to some names, and have your participation. I think you're going to learn a lot, and we're very, very excited to kick this off. And also very grateful for Amgen's support, because by sponsoring this panel, they're helping us expand our work over here at Beyond the Uniform. And all of this is 100% free for you to join. So costs nothing. You can register through our newsletter or look for a link on the site. Hope to see you there. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to challenge and support members of the armed forces to succeed in their post-service civilian career. Today's episode number 271 with Stu Braden.
As soon as they run into financial problems, there's marital problems. Usually there's drinking, there's just all the domestic things that you don't ever want to see. And what's sad is that here's families that survived two decades of war, and they retire and they can't survive peace.
My guest today, Stu, started a nonprofit to help the special operations community, and he structured it in a way where it's both partner and member run, which is a really cool way to structure an organization. He has grown it to over 2,000 members in 60 countries with 88 corporate partners, and it's grown at a rate of 10 to 15% every single year, which is an incredible accomplishment. He talks about what it's like to establish what he calls a network of networks. And governments are now starting to go to this network of networks to seek advice on some really compelling challenges. He also talks about challenges facing the Special Operations Forces community, as well as what it's like to start and run a nonprofit. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you will find over 270 episodes just like this. Each one of them has show notes with links to every single thing we discuss, as well as text transcripts, thanks to Kathleen Dillon. Special thanks to Jay Tillman, who on Apple Podcasts left a 5-star review for Beyond the Uniform, where he said, "Credit to Justin for filling a market need and supplying some great content to energetic vets looking to make a dent outside of the service. Appreciate how Justin and the interviewees balance military jargon and industry speak, the hardest trait to break out of the blocks." Special thanks to you, Jay Tillman, and to all of you who have left positive reviews on iTunes. It really helps get the word out about the show. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Stu. Joining me today in Tampa, Florida, my guest is Stu Braden. Stu, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks for having me.
So for listeners, Stu is the president and CEO at the Global Special Forces or Special Operations Forces Foundation. It is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that aims to build and grow an international special operation forces network of military, government, commercial, and educational stakeholders in order to advance special operation forces capabilities and partnerships to confront global and networked threats. Stu started out at the Citadel and served in the Army Special Forces, retiring as a colonel. So Stu, maybe to start things off, if you ran into someone on the streets who's serving in the military or is a military veteran, and they said, "Hey, what is the Global SOF Foundation?" How would you explain the work that you're doing?
It's a professional association for special operations, and it's international. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and basically we convene and advocate for the special operations community worldwide.
And where did the idea come from? What was the genesis of starting this?
It was not my idea, actually. It was, I was assigned to US SOCOM I was about 9 months out from retirement, and we were doing, and we were directed to support the U.S. Geospatial Intelligence Foundation, a big symposium they do every year called GeoInt. It was 2013. And the whole time we were doing it, you know, we were struggling with, you know, being able to interact with CENTCOM and SOCOM, and I was assigned to SOCOM. And throughout the entire process, you know, the president of the U.S. Geospatial Intelligence Foundation, Keith Mosbach, kept asking me, why doesn't Special Operations have a professional association? And I was working directly for Admiral Bill McRaven at the time. I was working 15 hours a day, 6 days a week. I really wasn't looking for a hobby. I didn't even know what a 501c3 was. I mean, I knew it was some nonprofit thing, but, you know, I couldn't pass a test on any of, you know, what a 501c3 does or how it's organized and stuff. And so he encouraged me to consider doing it. And, you know, I was sitting there over Christmas one, you know, on leave and bored, and I figured you ought to look into it. And I started to look into it. And what I really liked about the U.S. Geospatial Intelligence Foundation was that it was partner and member run. It wasn't a bunch of retired senior leaders, you know, sitting there running an organization like us, you know, a bunch of formers. And so their organization requires the members and partners to actually be active. You know, you have to row or the boat doesn't move. And I really liked that. You know, I said, wow, that's different than, you know, all the other professional associations. And the more I read, the more I learned, the more I liked it. And they said, hey, we'll help you stand this thing up. And I talked to a couple of my friends and colleagues, and I said, hey, look, would you be interested in doing this? And of course, Megan Keeler Pettigrew, my COO, was like, yeah, I'm in. She says it's like her Jerry Maguire moment. You know, she was the stood up there and got the, you know, the and Dr. Keenan Yoho, our vice president, you know, he's a PhD in business and supply chain management over at Rollins. But, you know, he's like, yeah, you guys got to do this. And so we went forward. We're hitting our fifth anniversary here next month or May. And so we'll be going into our sixth year. You know, we consist of individual members and corporate partners. We have over 2,000 individual members from over 60 countries. And we have 88 corporate partners, a lot of which are international, some of which are international. And we seem to grow about 10 to 15% every year. So it's been a wild ride. We now have 6 full-time employees. I think we went the first 2 years, 2.5 years with just Megan and myself, working probably 18 to 20 hour days. And so, you know, we've matured quite a bit. You spend the first 2 or 3 years trying to explain who you are and what you are to everybody. And because we're new, we're disruptive. And if you know anything about me personally, I'm disruptive. That's just the way my career has been and just the way I'm wired. And so, you know, we've met a lot of resistance. We've fought through all that. And, you know, over 5 years, we've kind of mitigated some of the drama. There's always going to be drama, but, you know, we are who we are, and we're not going to go away. Our partners like us, our individual members like us, and we're going to keep growing and going.
That's awesome. I mean, that's really incredible to have 2,000 members over 60 countries. That's just really outstanding numbers, and I can only imagine how much work it's taken to get the organization here. And I love that aspect of partner and member run. What's, just to get a little bit more granular, what are some of the things that the partners and members are doing throughout the year? Is this like an in-person discussion, and what are some of the topics that seem most relevant today?
Yeah, well, I would say yes to all of the above. I mean, we're designed in committees, right? So we have a programming committee that focuses on all our events. We have an outreach committee that focuses on how we deal with things such as think tanks, Congress, parliaments, you know, depending on the country, the who, you know, who we work with in those governments, because we do, you know, we do talk to governments who ask us our advice. It's not a thing or a, you know, a staff thing. I mean, what we are is a network of networks. And so if we get a question, what we do is we try to bring together subject matter experts that we have in our network that can provide the best answers to that question. And so those committees drive everything that the foundation, we have a small business committee, we have a capabilities committee, and they all report to an entity called the Strategic Advisory committee. And what happens is each one of the partner levels elects a representative for 1 year to sit on that committee. And then we also have the five founding partners, and they each get a permanent seat on that. And all the subcommittee, you know, the other committees flow up through that strategic committee. And if the strategic committee says that's what we want to do, then, you know, we push that before the board. And the board's really simple. It only does fiduciary things. And the reason is because many of these people are business folks and they don't have time to sit around every day doing the fiduciary stuff. So the board really focuses on, is it in the budget? You know, is it in the bylaws and is it in the IRS reporting standards for 501c3? And if the answer to that is yes, then we do what the strategic committee wants to do. You know, and we have lots of backstops. Like we do an independent audit every year. You're not required to do that as a 501c3. But to be very frank, there's a lot of shady 501s out there. So every year we pay the money and we do it. And that just, you know, mitigates anybody making any assumption that we're reckless with the money that we have. So it's different that way. I will tell you, in the outreach committee, the small business committee helped us develop what we call the Soft for Life program. And, you know, it's really helps special operations community forces transition. But the reality is it wasn't started to help operators. It was started simply because we had tons of people in the defense industry, and not even in the defense industry, they wanted to hire special operations people. They wanted people that were assessed, trained, selected to thrive in an environment of pure chaos, right? That's what they wanted. They're like, hey, because that is my, you know, we have construction companies that are building major, huge construction sites, and they love hiring these folks because they can go in there and it's just a normal day at the office for a bunch of special ops people. You got 500 things going on simultaneously. What you don't want to happen happens. And so they really enjoy, you know, one, supporting the veterans aspect, but hiring these. But it was a small business committee that said, how do we hire more of these veterans? And, you know, we set out on a quest to do it, and we developed what we call the Soft for Life program. And it was just originally started as a repository for resumes, right? For people that are in the individual members could submit their resume. And the way we work is, if you're on active duty, it's free, right? It doesn't cost you a penny to be in the foundation. And you submit your resume, but we wanted them to be individual members. We just didn't want people, you know, slinging their resumes into a bucket. We wanted it to be individual members. We wanted to be able to ensure that we have your contact information and that we can hound you about maintaining your records and keeping everything up to date. And so it's current, you know, we owed that to people that were looking inside the system. And then we allowed our corporate partners access to the system on all those resumes. And then the big question came out, well, how do you know the resumes are good? Well, you know, that's not my job. I don't know that, you know, I'm trying to provide a service. So then we reached out to what's called the Honor Foundation. It's another nonprofit that's headquartered out of San Diego, California. It originally started to help the Navy SEAL community transition. They've since, you know, moved to the East Coast. They've got two campuses on the East Coast. They've got a virtual campus, but it's really focused on the special ops community and helping the special operators transition. It's a 15-week, 120-hour course that's frankly unmatched. You know, I mean, it's purely focused, designed and built for the special ops community and the things they've done. And they've done survey after survey, individual interviews. So they're constantly tweaking and tailoring that program to the community. And, you know, I've seen a lot. I've never seen anything like it. So it's a really phenomenal thing. And we decided, heck, why don't we just bring them into the Soft for Life program and make them, you know, the cornerstone for, you know, the transition education. And so the Global Soft Foundation continued to run the network, manage the resumes piece, and then we let the training piece go to the Honor Foundation. And then one of the next things we discovered quickly was that, you know, none of our vets, none of our people transitioning, frankly, had done the due diligence financially. We found out that through our surveys is that financial stress was bar none the number one issue that we were facing. And so we reached out to AFMA, which is the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. It's the oldest nonprofit in the United States of America. And we said, hey, look, you guys do work specifically for, you know, the military? You know, would you provide your services to people for free? The answer was absolutely. So we brought them in as the third element of the Software Life program. So there's three of us nonprofits in the Software Life program, and it was all started simply by a bunch of small businesses saying, how do we hire more special operations people? That is a vignette on how the organization works.
That's awesome. For listeners, I'll add this in the show notes for the episode, but the Honor Foundation, I'll add a link there. And in episode 87, I sat down with Joe Musselman, who is the founder of the Honor Foundation. He talked about that. Yeah, I didn't realize, Stu, that they're on two campuses now, and it's really great to hear how that's grown. And it sounds like that 15-week, 120-hour course is an exceptional resource for members of the special of the soft community.
Actually campuses now.
Oh,
they're
wow.
Putting a campus in down near Stone Bay to support the Marine MARSOC Raiders, which is awesome. They've got a virtual campus, which, you know, to be frank, it'll be the biggest campus there ever will be, because 50% of the folks in the community are deployed at any one given time. So, you know, it doesn't matter where you physically live. You're often not there. You know what I mean? You're just not there. So the virtual campus gives the community a huge leg up, and they have, and I'll be honest with you, the Honor Foundation has spent an insane amount of time and money on working on that thing. They are constantly improving it. But it's going to allow them to touch a significant number of people from the community. And when I say the soft community, I'm not talking about just trigger pullers. You know, we're a 4-to-1 ratio. So for every guy out there, you know, we're like NASA. For every one person you see walking in space, there's four people behind them, making sure that they're safe and they've got all the things that they need to do the job. And the soft community is no different. So it's anyone that's in our formations, our tactical formations, is, you know, considered a part of that, and they're accepted into that. So it's a much bigger than just the, you know, the trigger pullers and the, you know, what everybody thinks is there.
What are some trends that you're seeing with our transitioning soft community? Is there anything you've seen in terms of challenges or other trends?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, a lot of people, what I've learned, and I've been out 5 years as of the end of May, and a lot of people tell you what they think is wrong, but they really don't know. There's no empirical information. What we did in the Soft for Life program is we created a survey, and we sent it out to all the folks. We got 550 responses back from the thing. And then from that information, we tweaked our programs and we did a couple of things. The biggest issue we're finding, hands down, is financial readiness. There's a lot of reasons for that, right? You know, we got guys that are lieutenant colonels and senior NCOs and sergeant majors in the Army that were not in the military prior to 9/11, right? They came in after the towers fell. Right. So they don't really understand what a peacetime, you know, drag the military is and all the things that happen. They've been raised in an environment where there's hostile fire pay, there's tax free things. And so they're getting a phenomenal amount of additional income that was not provided prior to 9/11. It was rarely provided. There were some incidences, but not like it is today. And so they have lived for almost two decades on all this money. This additional money that's being provided to them. And what happens is most people think that that's their value when they transition, and they never really look at their base pay, which is more in line with what, you know, the private sector is going to pay them versus what they're actually making. People are not going to give you housing allowances and hostile fire pay and tax exemptions. It's just not going to, that's not reality when you get out of the military. And these, and our forces have built a lifestyle based on money that's not sustainable after the military. It's rarely sustainable. You know, and I say that across the board, you know, and so what we did is we've done the survey. That survey's out there. We posted, we have a website called softforlife.org. It's softforlife.org. You can see the executive pieces of that. You'll see that financial readiness, bar none, the number one issue. You know, when I first got out, you know, I'd get approached by guys, hey, sir, I want to talk to you about transitioning and everything. And, you know, at first they would start talking and it's, you know, and I'd let them talk. And as soon as I'd hear them say something, you know, that was like way off, I would kind of interrupt them and stop them and say, hey, look, you know, that's really not how it works, you know. And, you know, you got to understand the special ops community. They're all cocky, self-assured. You know, that's what we want. You know, I mean, we actually seek those people, right? You know, because we ask them to do crazy things. We need people that are, you know, that are not average. And you know, once I interrupt them and try to tell them what reality is, you know, often they just don't listen to you, right? And so, you know, my wife one day told me you should just let them run and interject when they've, you know, finished their whole thing versus, you know, interrupt them and correct them. And so I changed my whole approach to them. And when they started telling me about, you know, hey, you know, this is what I'm doing, I would just let them go and let them go and let them go. And the very first question I would ask them is, how long can you go unemployed? And usually I'm talking to a male who's standing next to the COO, his spouse, who pays all the bills because he's never home, who manages everything because he's never around. And you can see terror in her eyes because she knows the numbers. He has no clue. He just goes to work. You know, she is truly the COO of the operation. And she will usually respond to my question and say, we can go 3 to 6 months. And I just usually give a good pregnant pause and say, second question is that college money and savings, or is that a discretionary account that you have set aside just in case you're unemployed? She usually responds is by saying that's everything. And sadly, in our survey, what we found is that most of our people are underemployed or unemployed 9 to 15 months, right? And what happens is they don't adjust their lifestyle to match what their retirement or their, you know, their income truly is, right? So they're on active duty. They have great, you know, lifestyles that exceed their base pay. They get out. They're not making that kind of money. And nothing changes in their lifestyle. And what happens is their burn rate on that 3 to 6 months of savings is just gone. And frankly, when that goes, you see marriages just crumble. I mean, it's almost like it's a given. As soon as they run into financial problems, there's marital problems. Usually there's drinking, there's just all the domestic things that you don't ever want to see. And what's sad is that here's families that survived 2 decades of war and they retire and they can't survive peace. It's sad. What we have found often is if you can get these people transitioned and you can get these people into good jobs, things that they want to do, not a job, but something they really enjoy and something they're happy to be doing and they're excited about being you know, involved with, it's life-changing, right? You know, I mean, there's a lot of benevolent organizations out there for the wounded and the KIAs, and that's wonderful. You know, they need to keep doing more, not less. But, you know, for 98.5% of the folks that, you know, just leave the service, separate from the service, there's not a lot of things that really impact them directly and stuff. And the biggest thing they're looking for is work. And so that's kind of why we formed the Soft for Life program. We wanted to get them into our corporate partners, you know, who are focused on people. You know, they hire our people. They want our people. They understand and respect the culture that we have and the ethos that we have. And so that's been a huge piece, but it's the financial readiness piece. The second thing I would tell you that's really horrible is we don't prepare for retirement medically. I mean, I'll be very honest. We all lie. We lie about our medical status. We want to go on the mission. How are you doing? The doc. Oh, I'm good, doc. I'm good. I'm ready. Does this hurt? Nope. Don't hurt. You're going to be all right? Yep. I'm good. I'm good. I mean, that's the person that we assess and select into our ranks. We're not looking for somebody that's going to quit. We want the guys and gals that go to the last drop of blood pumps through their heart. They're going to fight to the end, never quit. And so that same person is now telling the doc, they're good deep down. They're not good. You know, they're not ready to go. And it's a leadership challenge, but I'll be frank with you, man, even as a former SOF leader, you don't want to be the guy to tell somebody they can't deploy. I mean, they want you dead. I mean, everyone will turn on you if you're that guy. Everybody thinks it's very easy to, you know, as a leader, just to say, no, you can't go. That's one of the hardest things you'll ever do. It's like turning off a machine that's solely built to do that. And so medically, we've got people that retire, you know, that spent, you know, 15 out of 20 years in the Ranger Regiment, and they are broken, busted up. But let me tell you, their medical records, they got nothing in there, man. And you can't do that, or they'll pull you out of the unit. You know what I mean? And so guys would, frankly, you know, they would hide their injuries, and, you know, and then now when they go time to retire, there's nothing in the documentation that shows that they were injured, busted up and stuff like this. And, you know, and usually what guys try to do is spend the last 6 months capturing all the injuries, but you can't do that. You know what I mean? It just doesn't, it never gets to what it should be to show you the injuries. But I mean, you don't go 5 years in this business without destroying your body. And when you go 15, 20, and 30 years, I mean, you know, you might look fine, but let me tell you, man, these guys are a wreck. When I retired, I had 2 volumes of paper medical records. Each volume was 2 inches thick. Now it's all digital. I don't know. I'm sure I'd be a couple CD-ROMs or DVDs worth of stuff. But it's a cultural thing, right? You know, it's a cultural thing. And, you know, honestly, I don't know how we're going to change that. You know, I mean, I'm not that smart, you know, but I mean, these are the things that are reality. So we've got people that aren't financially ready. They're not medically ready to, they're not, you know, they're not even getting the things that the VA should be giving them because they didn't understand how the medical system worked and stuff. And so they start off at a horrible disadvantage. They don't have the money they need financially, physically, they're a disaster, and they're not getting all the VA benefits and things that they should be getting. I mean, they'll get VA care, but you know, they're not getting any of the disability and the stuff that they should be getting, that, you know, frankly, that they deserve, right? And then, you know, and of course, the last thing is, you know, half of them aren't prepared for, you know, they don't know what they want to do. That's the, you know, they call it the Honor Foundation, you know, it's the why. What is it you want to do? You can go out and get a job at Burger King or anywhere, right? But, you know, is that really what you want to do in the next chapter in your life? Is that something that you're going to be passionate about? Is it going to make you happy? And, you know, a lot of people will get out of the military and they'll retire into, you know, civilian clothes and be a contractor and do the same sort of kind of thing that they were doing and stuff. And so others want to try different things. You know, some people want to keep serving. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, if you can be a contractor and do the same sort of kind of mission, you know, that you were doing in the military, then there's nothing wrong with that. You know, that is a form of service to the country. You know, even though you're doing it for money, hell, you're doing it for money in the military. You're not doing it for free. And so that is a form of serving and stuff. And so, you know, me personally, I wanted to keep serving. I was given lots of lucrative offers from the private sector. I mean, making a lot more money than I made on active duty. And I elected to start a nonprofit and take a serious pay cut. And I'm okay with that. You know, I mean, because my desire to serve was higher than, you know, my desire to make money. You know, again, my wife has been the COO of the operation. I mean, honestly, when I was at CAP class and they were asking you to make a budget, I didn't know how much money I made. You know, I literally had to go look at the, you know, my LES, which I hadn't looked at in 20 plus years, and say, oh, wow, okay, all these money, you know. And so, again, it's a different world. But helping the community figure out, you know, what it is you want to do when you get out. What is your passion? What's going to make you wake up every day with that same burning drive that you had in the special ops community? That's what you're looking for. You know, one of my guys, a senior warrant officer, CW5 retired Dennis Morgan. He's always wanted to be a mechanic. He just completed his RV mechanics course. He is now running his own RV repair facility. He's in heaven. You know, he did other things, and he goes, you know, this is what I really wanted to do, is open my own thing, and he's doing it. People go, God, he went through the military, but that was his passion. That was his why. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, you're going to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. I mean, your why is what, you know, what inspires you and what motivates you. And that's the third obstacle, is getting the community to sit down and figure out, you know, what is it you really, really are trying to do when you do it? A lot of guys, they go out, they get master's degrees and things they could care less about, you know, and then, you know, they they struggle because the things they really want to do, they don't have the educational, they haven't prepared for their why. Does that make sense?
Yeah, this is great. And I was just taking notes as you were talking. So just a couple things I want to call out for listeners. First of all, I love what you're saying about financial literacy. I would say that one of the biggest challenges I've heard from guests on the show in 260 plus interviews is not being prepared financially for the transition and having it take longer than they thought it would. And then that second point around I would rephrase what you said about, I think that veterans in general can do a poor job advocating for themselves. And you spoke to the point of, you know, these are the soft community. And I think this extends to many veterans. They do a great job of pushing through personal barriers, like doing whatever it takes to have the mission succeed. And I think that the flip side of that coin that works against them when they transition to their civilian career is they're not adept at advocating for themselves and really making sure that their needs and their family needs are met. They have almost operated in a deficit for decades, you know, and so that can be a big transition. And I wanted to call out for listeners.
They don't have negotiating power.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in the military, you get what you get, right? Yeah. This is what you get. This is your rank. This, you know, and it's already prescribed, right? It's the government, right? But in the private sector, it's not. I mean, you could go in and say, hey, wait a minute, you want me to do this? That's great. You know, here's what it's going to take to do it. Da, 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 da. And if I'm doing more, you know, you can ask to be compensated more, supported more. Like, hey, you know, often it's not, I need more money. It's, hey, I need more people. I need more resources. Those, and in the private sector, that registers, you know what I mean? But we're so unfamiliar with, you know, we're just used to saying, Roger that, you know, Rangers lead the way, and we just move out, you know? And I mean, it's different. It's different in the private sector. We're horrible at advocating.
I love that. I love that thought on the negotiation skills. And I also wanted to call it for listeners that third point. I love how you're saying that, like finding your why. I'll put in the show notes a link to episode 223. Peter Docker, who's the right-hand man for Simon Sinek, who did a famous TED Talk called Start With Why. He goes through an exercise of finding your why. And I believe that was a big influence for Joe, the work of Simon Sinek and that course on identifying your why. It's so critical, especially for the military community, where you have a very clear purpose and identity in the military, and you have to reestablish that when you get out of figuring out who you are and what your why is. And I love that example of the guy working on RVs. Like, who knows what it is? It might be something completely different than what you did in the military, but it's so crucial to figure out that new purpose. Do you have any advice for listeners, especially on that financial literacy piece? Do you know of any great resources to help them become more financially literate and become more prepared financially for that transition?
Yeah, I mean, So I'm a huge believer in ASMA, right? I'll give you. You just got to bear with me on this. I'd never heard of them. You know, my father was on active duty when I came on active duty. They used to be called the Army Mutual Aid Association, right? Started back in the Civil War. It really came to highlight in the Little Big Horn, right? There was no benevolent organization inside of government. And so when the 7th Cavalry basically got wiped out at Little Big Horn, we had whole forts with families. And, you know, in those days, they buried you where you fell, right? I mean, there was no taking you back to Arlington. I mean, they dug a hole and they buried you and that was it. Daddy ain't coming home and there's no STLI. There's nothing. And so mom and the kids are back at Fort wherever. And that's it. The male population was gone. And so AFMA was created to help, you know, work through that. It's matured over time. And so what they do is they will sit down and they will go through all your stuff. And what you have to understand is financially, your position changes with your age, with your income, with your children, all these different things. And it's not something that remains constant throughout, right? So, you know, the things that you need for insurance when you're a 22-year-old with two kids and a new wife and all this stuff is not what you need when you're like me and you're 57 years old and you've got three kids, two of which are, you know, one is out of college, one is about to be out of college, and one's about to go into college. My life and my financial arrangements are completely different than that person who's 22. And over that span of their, you know, careers and lifespan, it changes, right? You know, so as soon as all my kids, as soon as my wife and I truly are empty nesters, you know, a lot of the insurance policies and all this other stuff, I don't need all that. You know what I mean? I got to retailor refit the ship to match, you know, the two of us and, you know, looking for, you know, how we intend to spend, you know, the final chapters of our lives. And so you know, AFMA does all that. That's what they do for the armed forces. I mean, they will really do a extensive, it's like a book. I mean, it's probably 60 to 70 pages, and they'll go through everything. And then they do a VTC with you and your wife if they can't meet face to face. And they're now growing in all these cities. So, you know, the probability of you being able to sit down with a human being is high. And it doesn't cost you anything. You just let them tell you what's what. They don't sell stuff. They'll tell you what they recommend. Like, hey, we trust these people. You can pick from the menu. I'll give you a perfect example. So I got out of the military, right? I had almost $200,000 in the thrift savings, you know. And my whole concern was I have Edward Jones managing my private stuff. But I mean, you know, who manages, you know, my thrift savings? I didn't know. It was a 1-800 number. You call, it's the faceless them, you know. But what if something happened? I mean, if I wanted to do something, you know, I didn't even know how to do anything with it. And I made the decision that I wanted a human being, right? I decided that I wanted to take that money out of the government's control. I wanted to shift it into entities where I could speak to a human being and I could interact and I could be more conscious of my finances, right? That's a bold step. It's not as hard as you think. It's not as bold as you think, right? It's just, you know, asset visibility. That's what I personally wanted to have. And so I wasn't sure what to do. AFMA gave me your current personal portfolio is pretty good. It's not aggressive, but it's, you know, we would say it's not conservative. It's not a fixed income kind of thing. And so what I did is I split the money in half. I gave half to my current financial advisor. I gave the other half to AFMA. And I had AFMA establish a very conservative portfolio. Like if the world, you know, ended tomorrow, you know, I would be okay. That those, you know, financial resources would be fine. They do all these services for the military. I mean, their headquarters is on Fort Myers in Virginia. It's now called the American Armed Forces because they do everybody in the Department of Defense. They don't care what your rank is. That's not important. I'll give you the first time I ever had to deal with AFMA. I was a lieutenant. I was in the 11th Armored Cav Regiment. And, you know, we had a mine accident explode on a range. And I think we lost 8 people and we had 12 double amputees. You know, this is all before 9/11 and things like this, you know, were, you know, pretty horrific. This was all pre-cell phone, pre-computer, you know, everything was mimeograph types machine. And, you know, we had to bring in survival assistance officers and stuff like this. And AFMA just sent a plane with about 5 or 6, you know, retirees over there that worked for them. And they set up in our conference room and they were able to guide us, you know, through frankly, what was then a mass casualty, you know. And to be frank, you know, they just assigned, you know, casualty assistance to some officer, senior NCOs. Here you go. You have no knowledge, no training, no understanding. And it's your job to work through the benefits for this family who's, you know, who's grieving over the loss of the service member, you know. And you don't really know what the heck you're supposed to do. I mean, it's just buffoonery. And so AFMA just didn't, they just said, don't worry about it, man. We put people on a plane, flew them there, took care of everybody, never asked for a penny, didn't say a word. And I was like, that's money I ever spent.
That's awesome. And for listeners, I'm going to add a link to this in the show notes. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is AAFMAA, AFMA. Is that right?
Yep, that's
okay,
it.
Okay, great. I know we're starting to run a little short on time. One thing I wanted to ask straight off the bat is someone's listening. They're fired up with what you're doing with the Global Soft Foundation. They want to support your work. Could you maybe speak to a couple different ways that people could get involved or help support your work?
Yeah, so, I mean, we are a professional association for special ops. I tell everybody, if you have served in our ranks and our formations and you're not a member, you should join. You can do it online. Wait till Monday because Monday we open up our new association system. It's a brand new system. You know, it's an automated system that's built specifically for association. So it'll make your enrollment and whatnot easier. You should join, right? If you're already out, it's $25 a year, or it's $50 for 3 years, which is half the price of any other association. We did that intentionally because, one, we want you to have some skin in the game. We don't make a penny off. I mean, actually, your $25 pays for the system that you're on. But we wanted to do that because every year when your membership is up, we send you an email. We make sure that your stuff is current in the system and that you're actively in the network, right? This is an automated network. We do events that bring people together physically as part of the network. But you should get in the network. That's step one. As part of the software life thing, what that does is all our corporate partners post job openings, right? And we send those out in emails. I think it's about every other week. And it says, here are the new ones, here are the old ones. There's a soft thing. You can log in. You go into the portal. You have access to all those jobs. You click on it. It takes you right to the job site. If you have questions and stuff like this, you know, we're responsive to that, you know, or we can get you in contact with the people in the company. That's a push system. We also have a pull system. So all our corporate partners have access to your resume. You know, I tell people, just put your resume in. If it's not right, just stick it in there. It doesn't matter. I mean, these people are used to, you know, military people with horrible resumes. They got it. You know what I mean? But a lot of them are former military and they know what to look for and they'll find it, you know, and over time you can work on building out your resume and making it better and that not, but it'll get you in the game, right? You're in the pool, you're in the fight, and you can do things that way. And that's what being an individual member does. I tell you, you should come to our events. We got them all over the place. If you're a member, you'll get inundated with emails about all these little events that we do, and you should attend it. It's a network. You know, I can't stress enough about, you know, building a network and staying a network. It's really hard in the special ops community because it's a secretive society. It's pretty aloof, you know, and very introverted and stuff. And, you know, you will not survive in the private sector being introverted and kind of standoffish. You just won't make that. So, you know, you got to reach inside of you and find that extrovert and get it out there if you want to, you know, do well in the private sector. And then the last thing I will tell you is, you know, if you don't have, you know, if you can't do any of those, I mean, you can just donate to the Software Life. It's expensive running Software Life. You know, we are a true nonprofit. We actually spend every penny we bring in for these things. And so what we do is we will sponsor seminars at every event we do. We usually bring in Joe and the Donner Foundation, and they'll do an 8-hour crash course transition seminar. And the only thing they will focus on is getting you to get your why on paper. That's all it is. And let me tell you, you will leave exhausted. It is not a spectator sport where you sit back and tell, I mean, you are physically and mentally doing stuff. You are engaged. There's no hiding. You know, it's not a trade. You know, it's a jobs fair. I mean, you are actually engaged and involved. It's a long 8 hours. I mean, it's draining. But when you leave, if you don't have your why, you'll be really, really close to having it. And you'll have a much better understanding of the things that you should be thinking about in transition versus the things that you shouldn't be thinking about.
That's great.
What I would do.
This is great. I also wanted to ask, I know that you're affiliated with the Spirit of America Advisory Board. Could you just share a little bit more about the Spirit of America and what your involvement with the organization has been like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love them. What they're doing is, I mean, that's basically a pro-U.S. NGO, non-governmental organization, and they do phenomenal things on behalf that the government, frankly, can't do, right? You know, Jim Haken, Jim runs the whole organization. I mean, inside the military, if we're in a place and we say, hey, you know, we want to do a humanitarian thing to fix this problem in this refugee camp, I mean, the bureaucracy that we got to go through, because not just with DOD and State Department and USAID, by the time we get the money and the approval, it's over. I mean, every piece is broken out, it's over. And it could be years. It could literally be years. Jim doesn't have to do that, man. He can move. He is a private entity that operates in support of, you know, the U.S. Policy objectives and stuff, and he could just step right in and go, hey man, I can do that right now. I got the money. Where do you need it? Let's roll. And it is awesome. You know, I just can't say enough things. I mean, he makes the bureaucracy less of a detriment. You know what I mean? Again, like all nonprofits, he lives and dies off fundraising, you know, which is not easy to do. It will, you know, suck the life out of you and age you in dog years. But, I mean, you know, I have personally witnessed the things that he's done. I'm a huge believer in it. You know, we tried to, when we were down here, General Mattis was the CENTCOM commander and Admiral Bill McCraven was the SOCOM commander. We tried to get it to where we could have an MOU between CENTCOM, SOCOM, and Spirit of America. We, you know, of course, the whole bureaucratic system pushed back on that. You know, we had more lawyers involved than you could count. But at the end of the day, our special ops people on the ground truly use and appreciate what Spirit of America does. That's the bottom line. I mean, because they're doing things, frankly, that our government just it can't do. You know what I mean? And a lot of that's just because of the laws and the regulations and all that stuff, which are there for a reason. But, you know, having a private entity like Spirit of America be able to step in and do that is just insane. There's I know of no other non-governmental organization that does what they do. I know there's, you know, folks out there that do things in support of other governments that are bad. But this is one that does phenomenal projects. They hire a lot of former special ops people and all military people because they go to some pretty bad places. I mean, they go to where people don't vacation. You know, they're out there in you know, some really ugly situations and they're doing it because it's their passion. It's their belief. It's their why. And I think it's awesome. I just, you know, if you want to donate to something that truly does great things with the money you donate, then give them your donation.
This is awesome. Well, I always like to leave the last question open-ended, and you know, we've covered a lot of ground. It's really helpful to hear your view on the challenges facing the soft community and just to hear more about the work you're doing. I wanted to make space at the end here. What have we not covered that you'd like to share with listeners, or what would you like to leave them with before we wrap up?
I mean, Well, bottom line is the majority of the people that separate from the service, whether it's 4 years or 40 years, they're just looking for good work when they leave, right? They want to take care of their families. They want to improve their lives. You know, it's the American dream, right? That's what they're looking for and stuff. And I would just, you know, what I would do is I would encourage people in the military to treat transition like an operation. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, I said, it's a career change. And I ask them, when you came into special operations, what did you do? Oh, sir, I had to physically fit. I had to do all these types of things. I have, you know, all just a whole litany of months and months and sometimes years worth of work to prepare themselves for that. And the question I ask them is, well, what makes you think it's going to be any different in the private sector? You think you could just slide right out with doing nothing? And you're just going to fit right in and they're just going to hug and kiss? I tell people all the time, you know, this is a capitalist society, right? And they will absolutely take an interview with military people out of respect for their service to this nation. But business people won't hire you just because you served. You know, they'll lose their jobs and their livelihoods if they're hiring people that they're just, you know, doing it out of the kindness of their heart. They've got to hire people that can help them improve and sustain the business that they have. And so I would just encourage military people to treat it like an operation, prepare for it like it was an operation. And you do that with your family. Everybody's got to be involved because it is going to be a change in your life. And if everybody's not conditioned for that, you'll fail.
That's fantastic. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Stu. I appreciate the work that you're doing to help out the military and the veteran community. And for listeners, I'll have links to everything that Stu discussed, as well as links to the Global Soft Foundation, as well as the Spirit of America, so you can get involved with those if you'd be interested. Thank you so much, Stu. Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.